Welcome to the home stretch, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sterling Holmes with you up until 9 o'clock tonight. Dylan Michaels behind the glass. Fun show as Patrick Allen joins second segment today, right around 7:15. Talk Chiefs, talk the positional groupings of said Chiefs, and where we land. Scale of 1 to 10, nice little sliding scale. How comfortable are we at quarterback, wide receiver, offensive line, defense, special teams, all that and more? Also talking with Todd Lebo for the final hour of the show from 8 until 9 before he has a fun trip to Canada. What do you think? You think he drinks any milk out of a bag? Sorry, out of a bag?
I really hope so.
He drinks any Molson? Any Labatt Blue? Do you think he has any poutine? I don't know many other Canadian things.
Bacon does that.
Seriously, okay. Can we talk about that for a second? Just how bacon is one of the greatest things in the history of the world. And Canada goes, you know how we can screw this up? It's incredible. How did Canada screw up bacon? At least they didn't screw up whiskey too bad. I'm not going to lie.
Or maple syrup.
There's a few things Canada did all right.
They got a lot of good things.
They got a lot of good things. Hockey, super tight. Poutine, semi-tight. Milk in a bag, don't understand it. But I'm like, okay. But Canadian bacon? Are you kidding me? Name something more un-American than Canadian bacon. Can't do it. You can't do it.
For obvious reasons, right?
For obvious reasons, yeah. But also because, you know, what's the point of it? What's the point?
It's also ham.
So. It's bad ham, though. If I want ham.
It's actually really good. I actually like it.
You like Canadian bacon?
On pizza?
Oh, dude, you're gross, man.
Oh, come on.
You and I cannot order pizza together. I have my go-to. It's pepperoni, jalapeno, and pineapple. I call it the Honolulu Hot Lips, TM.
Yeah, we definitely we couldn't order pizza together, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I know. So you get the sweet, you get the spicy. It's a good mix.
I like all those things. I just don't know about the trademark.
No, that's fair. Oh, okay, I get it. Sorry, I can't be creative on this show. Apparently Dylan's now actually the guy running the show. No, it's your show, Dylan. You run it, pal. What are we going to talk about today?
We're going to talk about the Royals down 5-1.
Hey, they scored one because of an error by Miami. That was great, yeah.
So, yeah. And the perpetual sadness that is that team.
Perpetual sadness. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but Jacob DeGrom, he has a UCL tear again. I get it. We're not going to talk much baseball. This is the only baseball we're probably going to talk, but I feel so bad for Jacob DeGrom. He has to get surgery to repair a tear in his right ulnar collateral ligament, but I hate seeing him injured because he is so historically good when healthy. He legitimately had a 1.08 ERA last year. That's unheard of. Like, what Jacob DeGrom does when healthy is stuff you read about and hear about from like 1918 when some dude named Oil Can Johnson was pitching. Like, Jacob DeGrom is such a historical freak, such a historical aberration when it comes to the numbers he puts up. When he's getting perpetually injured, to me it hurts baseball because he is such a one-of-one type of guy. And we're going to look back on his career and say what could have been instead, not what was. And that always makes me sad with guys like that. Jacob DeGrom turns 35 shortly, if he's not already 35. Just a brutal blow for Jacob DeGrom. So, again, I know it's not Royals. I know the Royals, they're not too fun to watch right now. But anytime a baseball player of the caliber of Jacob DeGrom goes down, it's a blow for baseball in general. By the way, I worked an event this past weekend called the Big Slick out there in for Children's Mercy Hospital out there at T-Mobile Center. Great time. We helped raise over $3.5 million for Children's Mercy, which is just phenomenal. So Kansas City, step up. Give yourself a clap on the back. It was awesome, man. Over 20 million since the Big Slick has been going on. It's the event with Paul Rudd, Sudeikis, David Koechner, Eric Stonestreet, Travis Kelce, and Patrick Mahomes came this year. And I bring this up because George Karloftis, there was a item to bid where if you gave a certain amount of money, you got a Patrick Mahomes signed football. George Karloftis, very gracious, donated money for the Patrick Mahomes signed football. And I went up to him and I said, George, you know that's your teammate, right? I'm sure he'll sign something for you if you really want to. And he just goes, oh, no, man. Doesn't sign anything for us. Joking, obviously. But I thought that was very cool. Shout out to Karloftis. Mahomes and Brittany Mahomes also donated a lot of money as well, not just their time. John Sherman was very generous as well, donating a lot of money. I thought it was cool. I know the Royals are horrible right now, but that does take some stones for John Sherman to be in the public eye like that. Seriously, getting asked questions, I'm sure, at an event like that where you're probably not wanting to. I think it's cool. I might not always see eye to eye with Mr. Sherman when it comes to... is it Dr. Sherman? Is he a doctor? With John Sherman? I'll call him a doctor. He feels like a doctor to me. Maybe because my dentist is named Dr. Sherman, so it makes it a little difficult for me. I'm getting a little confused between my dentist and the guy who owns the Kansas City Royals. But I thought it was cool he was there in attendance, out in the open, with everything going on with the train wreck that has been this season for Kansas City. That was pretty neat, as well as him donating a good chunk of change. But I also want to point out, I had a chance to speak with Patrick Mahomes, and I thought it was hilarious. I introduced myself to Patrick, saying, hey, Patrick, it's Sterling Holmes here. Appreciate you being here and supporting such a great cause. He stops me and says, do you know me and Brittany, we have a kid named Sterling? And I thought, you know what? Stars, they're just like us. Like Dylan. Everyone knows they have a kid named Sterling. And he was just like, your name's Sterling? We have a kid named Sterling. I'm sitting here going, what a nice guy. Like, what a just down-to-earth dude. And I say that just to kind of pull back the curtain of these star athletes, especially Mahomes. You know, it's so easy to put them in this pedestal of they can, I don't want to say do no wrong, because Mahomes so far can do no wrong. But as far as, that was the most human interaction I have ever received from a superstar like that. It just really made me laugh.
Or it could be, well, that, and it could be a test to see who's like a weirdo. And if you would have said, oh, I know, then you would have just been immediately excommunicated from the circle. So you also may have played it off very well.
I played it off. I did really want to say,
but you, I know,
I wanted to say
every
so
part
bad
of you does
I
want to say
wanted
that.
To say no so bad. I wanted to say, I know you obviously named her after me, which then I think I really would have been in some trouble. But he did tell me I should add a "ma" to my last name.
See, you did good.
He told me that, not me telling him. He goes, Sterling Holmes, that's close to Patrick Mahomes. And I go, yeah, it's just, you know, a couple letters off. He goes, you should add a "ma" to your last name. And I'm like, all right. You know, if Patrick tells me to do it, I went and hit the old DMV today, got the name changed. So, yeah, this is now the Mahomes stretch with Sterling Mahomes. I think that's what we're going with now.
That's commitment.
That's commitment to the bit. Commitment to the bit.
I can't find if Mr. Sherman. Nope. They wouldn't call him Mr. Sherman here if he was a doctor.
If he was a doctor, right?
Yep.
So it's Mr.?
Yep.
We're good?
Looks like it.
Okay. We're all good there. But a lot of Chiefs talk. We're going to talk with Patrick Allen at 7:15 in the second segment, going through our positional rankings. I'm excited to do this exercise. Dylan, feel free to hop in as well. It's on a scale of 1 to 10. And give our comfort level heading into next year. Wide receiver, so 5's average. I know some people are going to give me a hard time because you say average and you automatically think of the grading scale in college and high school of 7. We're not doing this, pal. It's 5. 5's average in this, okay? We're not doing the high school college grade ranking. Not gonna happen. Before we go to break, I just finished A Clockwork Orange. Do you know that movie, that book?
I know it, but I've never seen it.
The thing with the eyes, you know, yes. Where he keeps his eyes open and they have to watch.
I've seen the cover.
You've seen the cover, right?
Yes.
So when I got the book at Barnes & Noble, big book guy over here. Yeah, I'm a nerd, okay? I get it. Stop calling me a nerd through your radio right now. I can actually hear you driving calling me a nerd. I get it. I've not seen the book, but the dude checking me out, not looking at me, but checking out the book, says, have you ever read this before? Do you know what it's about? And quite frankly, I said no. He goes, you're in for the weirdest book you have ever read in your entire life. I said, sure, pal. I'm sure it is. One chapter in, one page in, and I go, that dude was right. Picture someone, a 29-year-old in this instance, myself, not knowing anything about A Clockwork Orange, and then reading the first couple pages. You will be startled, surprised, befuddled, confused. It was an enigma, but we figured it out. A lot of fun. Now I actually want to see the movie. I know all these people who are older than me saying, how have you not seen the movie before? Sorry.
I've seen or read neither, so.
Yeah, Dylan, come on.
Oh, it looks fascinating, for sure. That is.
See?
I know that this is like it's 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb. Yeah, so
you don't just get Chiefs talk, royal slander, and behind-the-scenes action on the home stretch. You also get a nice learned talk about books, baby. That's what we're talking about. But we will take a quick break. Come back. We'll be joined by Patrick Allen of Arrowhead Addict, talking all things Chiefs and giving our positional rankings heading into the 2023 season. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the home stretch. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Sterling Holmes with you until 9 o'clock. Joined now by Patrick Allen from Arrowhead Addict for our Arrowhead Addict Breakdown. Patrick, how you doing?
What's up, Sterling? I miss you, man. I feel like we haven't talked in weeks.
It feels like it's been 3 months. It's been a decade at a minimum. Like, I have grown so old. My hair is perpetually gray now. Mustache is still strong. I'll give myself that. But besides that, it really going downhill. My back hurts worse. I got a bad wrist. I don't know.
Golf.
Yeah, what's new with you?
Not much, man. I'm just sitting here envious, scrolling through your Twitter feed, looking at you rubbing elbows with Creed Humphrey and Ted Lasso. I mean, you're a man about town out there.
Man of the people, if you will. Man of the people. Creed Humphrey, I wasn't so much rubbing elbows as it was my shoulder rubbing his elbow, because that is a large human being. He is every bit of 6'4". You know, sometimes centers, or at least the interior offensive linemen, are a little shorter. So you can make sure the quarterback can see over and everything.
Yeah.
Creed Humphrey's a big cat, and he is cut. He's not a old school lineman where he's got a big old gut on him. Creed Humphrey is a yoked dude. I'm a solid 5'10", pretty good shape. He makes me look like an ant, like a fourth grader potentially. And when I mean ant, I don't mean like an A-N-T. I mean like an A-U-N-T. Like, you know, when you have that short ant. Who's just a small ant. That's what I'm like next to Creed Humphrey.
Yeah, you know what, though? I mean, you're in the same room with a Super Bowl champion. Mm. I think that's saying something. You're going places, kid.
Yeah, we're trying to. Hey, Patrick did tell me to add a muh in front of my name, so I got that going for me as well. But let's talk about the Chiefs' positions and how we are going to rank them on a scale of 1 to 10, okay? Where is your comfort level heading into the 2023 season? Now, scale of 1 to 10, I'm saying 5 is average, okay? 5 is average. Not this high school college number of 7 being a C. We're not doing that. It's 5. Yeah. That's your average right now. We're doing the normal 1 through 10 scale. So,
you know, I want you to know I did a lot of prep for this. I created my own scale of 1 to 10 here, and I have 5 is mid, unremarkable, or fine.
I love it. So this is the Patrick Allen scale, if you will.
Right. We got 10 is legendary, and 8 or 9 is elite. 6 or 7 is good. 5 is mid, unremarkable, fine. 3 or 4 needs improvement. 1 or 2, major need. 0, trash.
Okay, I'm all in. I like your scale. I love this scale. Yeah, the Raiders would be a whole bunch of zeros, ones, and twos. Let's get into the quarterback one. I think you and I might be pretty much in agreement here. Where are you at here with QB?
Yeah, and just as a quick caveat, I considered calling zero Raiders, but I decided to go with trash so everybody would get it.
Oh, it's the same thing.
Yes, yeah. So, look, quarterback, obviously, I'm going to go with 10 here. This is a position where depth doesn't matter as much, especially when you have Patrick Mahomes. So legendary. You really can't ask much more from a quarterback group. I mean, the Chiefs have Patrick Mahomes, of course, which is all they need. Then they've got an 80-year-old boring veteran backup quarterback that Andy Reid loves, and a developmental prospect in Shane Buechele, who, you know, you hope never really sees the field unless he's playing mop-up duty or playing in a meaningless Week 18 game where the starters are resting because the Chiefs have already locked up the number one seed. In that case, you know, you hope he throws 7 touchdowns and some dumb team like the Raiders trade you a second-round pick for him. So I got a 10. I got a 10 for the QB.
Yeah, I have a 10, too. Mahomes, obviously the best quarterback in the NFL by a wide margin. I like Blaine Gabbert as the veteran, and I like Shane Buechele as the developmental guy, especially when you can keep 3 guys based without giving up that roster spot on the active 53. Makes a lot of sense, or the 53 man, and then also having one on the active game day makes a lot of sense to me. I like where the Chiefs are at quarterback. Talking to Matt Derrick earlier today, he gave them a 9.5. I asked Matt Derrick this question. He said a 9.5. I said, how is it not a 10? He goes, I only give a 10 if it was like Steve Young and Joe Montana as far as having the best of all time backup, where you can be like, okay, doesn't matter. You have a backup who's a stud as well you can throw in. So I go, all right, I'll grant you that one, but I'm going with a 10. I'm going with the 10 here.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I see where he's coming with that, but that's so rare that he's going to have that situation that I think it kind of comes down to the number one guy.
He told me he was giving out no 10s unless that was the case that arose. So, I can't fault the man. Can't fault the man. Running back. Scale of 1 to 10, where is your concern level, your confidence level with running back?
Well, I'm giving them a 6. And as you know, on my scale, 6 or 7 is good. Basically just above average. I think this is a good group. But you've got an ascending player in Isaiah Pacheco. We don't talk a lot about his performance last year. I feel like everybody was happy with him. But he averaged 4.9 yards per carry as a rookie. He had 960 all-purpose yards in the regular season. He had 197 rushing yards and 65 receiving yards in the playoffs, which I think gets overlooked a lot. And then you got McKinnon, who's a solid veteran backup, first-rate blocker, and your third down back. And then you've got CEH back there. And look, I mean, yeah, he's had injury issues. He didn't live up to his draft stock, but he's a fine running back. He's an average running back. He's a solid backup depth piece. And I would like them to add maybe one more veteran before we get to training camp, but I think they're solid. Not remarkable, but solid here.
Yeah, I went with a 6 as well. I believe that's what I gave when I did this earlier today. I actually deleted my numbers so that way I can try and be see if I get the same numbers that I did earlier, because that makes it fun, right? I'm trying to find consistency here, or if I talk myself into something different. But I'm going running back 6. They're slightly above average to me. Not a knock on them, but Isaiah Pacheco is a fine running back. He's a great first and second down back. My question for him is, does he ever evolve as a pass catcher, which he didn't have a ton of opportunity last year, or does he evolve as a pass protector, where he struggled mightily last year? Now, that's the biggest adjustment for running backs coming from college to the NFL is pass protection, the scheme, just making sure you pick it up. He has the want to, and that's a big part of that, right? He has the want to, he has the size, he should improve there, but I really need to see that first. Jerick McKinnon, who I like a lot, but how much do we see him throughout the actual regular season? We probably see him at the tail end of the regular season. We probably see him in the playoffs, but McKinnon is that secret weapon that they stow away. It's the Ferrari that they keep the top on until it's time to bust it out. And then when it comes to the back and the depth pieces, CEH is solid. He looked actually pretty darn good the first, 5 games of last year before he got injured again. What does he have in the tank? What's his motivation level at? We will see. But all things considered, him being your RB3, not bad. And then Denarik Prince is the real wild card here. Prince, a lot of people say, reminds people of Isaiah Pacheco, which is fine. I've heard Dave Tobe compare him to Nile Davis. Maybe Denarik Prince makes the roster and they keep four guys, and he is your kick returner, which makes a lot of sense if he is comped so likely to Nile Davis. But Denarik Prince, to me, is the name to watch.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it's a really solid group, and I'm really fascinated to see, does Isaiah Pacheco make the leap in year two? Pretty much all you could ask for from where he was drafted to what he gave the Chiefs last year, again, particularly in that playoff run where he made plays for them in just about every game. I'm excited about him, and I think there's plenty of depth in the group. And as we know with the Chiefs, running back is not the most important position on this team. They can win with guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Heading over to wide receiver now. Now, this one might be a little back and forth. I'm excited to see where you give this. Again, the Chiefs positions ranked, scale of 1 to 10, 5 being average. Patrick Allen from Arrowhead Addict joining us. Where are you with wide receiver?
Yeah, I'm going to give them a 5 here, which is unremarkable, average. You know me, Sterling. I'm a former actor. I studied theater. This is a group currently without a leading man. It's an ensemble. And last year's ensemble helped the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. But this is a slightly different group. I think there's a ton of upside with these guys. And there's multiple guys like Tony, Sky Moore, Rashee Rice, Justin Ross. If multiple of those guys hit, say two of them, say Tony and Sky Moore, Rashee Rice and Justin Ross, some combination of that to go along with MVS and Travis Kelce, then you could all of a sudden turn around and say, hey, wait, this could be one of the best pass-catching groups in the NFL. That's a year or two down the line, but that's what the Chiefs have set the table for. So for now, on paper, though, this is an average group, but one that is featured in an elite offensive system, and the Chiefs just last year proved that that is enough. And I think they've got enough depth here that if one or two guys don't work out, the other guys will step up. It'll be okay.
Yeah, I probably have them right around a 5.5, anywhere from 5 to 6 to average to maybe just slightly above. But I'm more in that average range as well. Again, the Chiefs don't necessarily have to have that. Last year was, what, maybe a 6.5 just because of the addition of Juju Smith-Schuster. There was more known last year. You go into this year. I love Richie James. You know that. You know that, Patrick. Huge Richie James guy. I'm not sitting here saying he's going to go for 900-plus yards, though. I'm not going there. And Richie James right now, currently on this Kansas City Chiefs roster, might be the most decorated wide receiver. Right? He had the best year last year of any wide receiver currently on the Kansas City Chiefs. But that was also with Danny Dimes throwing him the rock. So you should see some sort of improvement last from coming into this year. Richie James does not drop balls. He gets open. I'm excited for him, but you're right. It's a ensemble. Feels like they have a lot of wide receiver threes, a lot of wide receiver fours. You know, is Sky Moore going to take that next step? I'm high on Sky Moore, but I don't think it gets a K. I think Sky Moore probably leads this team in receptions, but what's that look like? It's going to be a lot of everyone pitching in game to game. You know, Rashee Rice, I think he could be great, but we have no idea. Not only that, in a Chiefs Andy Reid-led system, Chiefs wide receivers don't really get the opportunity. So you got to be somewhat reserved at least a little bit when it comes to Rashee Rice. MVS at this point is who he is. He's a fine player. He's a depth piece. He's a veteran. I'm cool with it. And then it comes down to Kadarius Toney. He's the game changer. He's the X factor. Does he take that next step? Does he stay healthy? That all remains to be seen. I do think they focus all this effort on him becoming the best wide receiver. They take him away from some of those gadget plays, and then they take him away from special teams, and I think they allow him to focus on being the best wide receiver one he can possibly be. The Chiefs did this with Tyreek Hill, right? Tyreek Hill at one point was a great return man. Probably was still going to be the best return man on the team, but what did they say? Hey, you're more valuable to us if you learn on being the best wide receiver you can be. I think they're going to have to take that same attitude with Kadarius Toney. But where it stands on June 6th, I got the Chiefs at a 5.5 out of 10.
I got bad news for you, Sterling. I don't know if Richie James is going to make the team.
How dare you, sir? How dare you? I will fly.
Listen.
No. No, you will not finish, Patrick. I am going to come to Chicago. I know where you live, Patrick. I will find you. I will come there, and we are going to throw hands, good sir.
You've got, I think you have one wide receiver slot up for grabs. Remember, last year the Chiefs only kept five. I think they'll keep six this year. You got MVS, Tony, Sky Moore, Rashee Rice. Those guys are going to be making the team. Then you've got Justin Ross, Richie James, Christian Watson. So, you know, you've got to find one receiver out of that group. I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be tough for him to make the team. He could do it, but I think there's one spot up for grabs.
What's going to be tough is when you and I throw hands, okay? When friends become foes. That's the name of this segment. When friends become foes with Patrick Allen from Arrowhead Attic. That's what we're doing right now. No, I get it, man. Everyone has their druthers. I know some people have Amir Smith Marsette. Some people probably have even John Ross in there. I know I've been hearing folks say they want to see seven wide receivers considering the injury concerns to Kadarius Toney and the unknowns with Rashee Rice, the rookies, and everyone else. You know what? No fullback. Maybe that's the way they go. We will see. I'm kind of with you, though. I think six wide receivers is probably what I would do personally. But, again, we will see. Tight end. Scale of 1 to 10. Where you're at? Where are you at tight end?
I'm going with an 8, so I'm calling this an elite position group. Obviously, Travis Kelce pulls the rankings way up. Gray, Fortson, and Bell, none of those guys are remarkable on their own right, but they work really well together as a group for the kinds of things that Andy Reid likes to do, running 12 and even sometimes 13 personnel. Gray and Fortson can show up occasionally and make plays in the passing game, although not consistently. And then you've got Bell, who's your reliable blocking tight end. But with Hall of Famer Travis Kelce leading this group, this pulls it into an elite group. Otherwise, it would be, you know, average to good.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. I'm at an 8 as well. Travis Kelce is similar to Mahomes, but maybe even more so as far as his peers. Travis Kelce is on such another level, it's not even close. Anyone who says George Kittle at this point is legitimately on drugs, and I worry for their health. I'm like, drug test this person. There's no way they're serious. They can't be real. It's Travis Kelce, extremely large gap. George Kittle, Mark Andrews, another large gap probably than, like, you know, Dallas Goedert, Pat Freiermuth, Kyle Pitts, TJ Hawkinson. But Travis Kelce is such a weapon. My only concern is Noah Gray. He's been fine. He's improved year after year. But if Travis Kelce were to go down, which you can probably say with a lot of different groups around the NFL, so maybe it's a little unfair, but if he goes down, do you trust Noah Gray to be your tight end one? Like, I don't know if I do.
No.
You know, Jody Fortson, I'm always intrigued by. I love the story. Dude is the best dressed man at the White House right now. I mean, that was incredible, his outfit. But he can't stay healthy, and when he is healthy, he never does what we expect him to do. So I can't really get behind that. Blake Bell is who he is, which is one of the best blocking tight ends in football, which he serves a role. But again, you're not counting on him to go out there and get 500 yards a year. I do like a couple of their depth pieces right now in Kendall Blanton, M-I-Z, as well as Matt Bushman. Both those dudes need to show out to have any chance of making the roster, but it's still a nice depth to have. I think an 8 overall is a pretty good number, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree. And it's for Noah Gray. Look, we just don't know. And I think that's a fair assessment. He's got limited opportunities to catch the football at the tight end spot with Travis Kelce on the field. He's been fine for them, and he's shown improvement each year in that regard. Hopefully we won't find out until Travis Kelce wants to retire whether or not he could step up and be, you know, something better than he is. Obviously, he's not going to be Travis Kelce, but I think he's an adequate backup for Kelce.
Yeah. Offensive line. Hit me with the offensive line. 1 to 10, where you at?
All right, I'm giving this one a 6. What? A good category.
Ooh.
I think you've got two elite players in Creed Humphrey and Joe Tooney, a very good player in Trey Smith, and two big question marks at the tackle position. The depth behind them is actually pretty strong. You got guys like Allegretti, Ryder, Lucas Niang back there, and now they've added Wanya Morris. If Juwan Taylor and Donovan Smith play well, this could be one of the NFL's best offensive lines. But I've got to see it first. So right now I'm saying, yeah, they should be good. But the tackle position is so important, and I just don't know, particularly about Donovan Smith.
I'm with you, and I like your explanation, but I'm at more of a 7-5, maybe an 8. I might even go with an 8 because I do think their interior of the offensive line might be the best in the NFL. I think their depth on the offensive line is some of the best depth they've had in the Mahomes era. I don't think that Juwan Taylor, while he is going to be a massive question mark, and I can disagree with the contract itself, I think he'll be an upgrade over Andrew Wiley. You know, I don't think there's any question there, right? I think he is an upgrade over Andrew Wiley and fits this offensive scheme much better based on his athleticism. And then it comes down to what's the difference between Orlando Brown Jr. and Donovan Smith? And it depends. Do you want to look glass half full? Do you want to look at it extremely, I don't want to say pessimistic, but you can look at it pessimistic if you want with the year he had last year. Donovan Smith was brutal last year. But I try and take the middle road here. I say maybe he's getting older and he's not what he once was, but also there was a perpetual turnstile at left guard and on the rest of the Buccaneers' offensive line. Not only that, Donovan Smith was injured in his own right. Not only that, Orlando Brown Jr. was just good, not elite, but just good. It's not like he has to be Trent Williams. And again, not only that, the worst games Orlando Brown Jr. had last year were when Joe Tooney was out. That should tell you something about Donovan Smith having the performances he had last year with his typical left guard out. He should improve being back, and this time having Joe Tooney as his just-to-his-right mate. I think the offensive line, even being a more pessimistic or less optimistic view, at least in my opinion, is at least a 7.5.
Yeah, I mean, they're right there. It really, I agree with you, it comes down to Donovan Smith. He was injured last year. He's never been great, especially if you look at his Pro Football Focus scores, which I know people are split on those grades. But, you know, they won a Super Bowl with him. He did a good job a couple seasons ago protecting Tom Brady. And you're now with Patrick Mahomes, who's much more mobile. Brady was a statue back there pretty much his entire career, especially at the end. So I think it'll be a little bit more of a forgiving situation for him in Kansas City, and hopefully he can have a bounce back year that he's healthy.
All right, let's head on the defensive line. Staying in the trenches, but the other side, defensive line. Obviously, Chris Jones headlines this group. But where is your confidence level when it comes to the defensive line heading into 2023 for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty high on the entire defense. I'm going to give this group a 7. I like this line. I think that they're multiple. They're deep. I think it's better than last year's group. Chris Jones obviously elevates them, but I love the additions of Omenihue, of Felix. You know, I like the prospects of year two of George Karlaftis. I think they've got solid depth at defensive tackle. I just think it's a good group that's really going to fit nicely into what Steve Spagnuolo wants to do on defense. I'm giving them a 7. They're on the upside of good. Close could be elite if all those pass rushers work out.
Yeah, I think end of year we might be looking at an 8. I think beginning of year, if it stands currently as is, no other veteran brought in, the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 games, you might be looking at about a 4. And the reason being, what's going to happen with Charles Omenihue? Is he going to get suspended at all? That's what I want to see, what that breaks down like. Because if he does, that gives me a lot of cause to pause. Not only that, you saw what happened just traditionally with rookie pass rushers. It takes about half the year before they really start making a major impact. We saw it with George Karlaftis. We saw it with Aiden Hutchinson. We saw it with Kayvon Thibodeau. Right? It takes about half the year before these guys really make a major impact. I assume the same is going to be true with FAU. Again, start of the year, I have some concerns. As the season progresses, I think you're going to see a really, really solid group. I think Karlaftis probably ends the year anywhere with 9, 10, maybe 11 sacks overall. I think Mike Dana is one of those perpetually underrated impact, not even impact players, just underrated unsung players, right? NASCAR package is going to be souped up again as the season goes on with Mike Dana, with Charles Omenihue. It's going to be really fun to watch. It really comes down to Chris Jones' health. If Chris Jones stays healthy, this is a very good group. If Chris Jones does not stay healthy, I have very, very many worries.
Yes, he's the straw that stirs the drink, so they like to say.
Yeah, and if that drink is not getting stirred, it is just a protein-powdered mess. let's talk about the linebacking group right here. Linebackers can go a lot of different ways here. I've talked to some folks. They're very, very bullish. I've seen some that are very, very pessimistic. Where do you land when it comes to the linebacking group for Kansas City?
It's one of my favorite groups on the team. I don't know why anybody would be pessimistic about it. It might be the best position group. I think it's on the verge of being elite. Nick Bolton, I think, is terrific. He fits perfectly into this defense. Willie Gay brings your athleticism and versatility. I loved the addition of Drew Tranquil. You've got that depth back there with year two of Leo Chanel. Like, this is a young, athletic group that played well last year, these linebackers, particularly in the playoffs. Nick Bolton out there making plays. I know he had some ups and downs last year. He had, you know, a few bad games, but that's going to happen over the course of a long NFL season. He's still a pretty young player. I'm thrilled with this group. I think they're going to be the strength of the team.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm about an 8 right now. Part of it is because of the Chiefs' scheme, right? They typically use two linebackers, makes it a little easier as far as to say, all right, where do they land? If they had to use three linebackers, where's my confidence level? It might go down just a little bit. Willie Gay Jr. is still... It's interesting, right? Because Willie Gay Jr. at times flashes so much. You're like, this guy, he's working his way onto the field. You can't keep him off. Then at times you're sitting here going, what the hell is he doing? We're still talking about potential entering year 4 for this guy? Come on. He's kind of an interesting case, but again, he's not your every down linebacker, which makes this a little easier for me. I love Nick Bolton, not just because I went to Mizzou, but because he's a damn good run stuffer, and he's so, so intelligent. And then I love Drew Tranquil. I loved that pickup. That was an outstanding get. There was a deficiency in the market where he was not getting paid a lot. Brett Veach swung in and said, hey, we don't need a linebacker, but this was too good of an opportunity to pass up. Let's get Drew Tranquil. He's a green dot for the Chargers. He is known as a pass coverage linebacker who also had 5.5 sacks last year. Then you also throw in Leo Chanel, who's supposed to be an athletic freak who can get up to the quarterback. Jack Conklin was a fine... special teamer in his own right. You're looking at this group saying, I love the versatility and everything they bring. So many players bring different attributes to this position group. I'm thrilled, frankly, with linebackers.
Yeah, Steve Spagnuolo likes versatility, and that's why I think a lot of people were surprised when they signed Drew Tranquil and said, well, do we really need him? Well, you look, if they worry about Willie Gay Jr. in coverage sometimes, then you bring in a guy like Drew Tranquil, now you have options. And you can move these guys around, you can keep them fresh, and maybe you want to blitz Willie Gay Jr. a little bit more, take advantage of that athleticism. Maybe you want to put three linebackers on the field and you get in that base package. So I think it's a terrific position group, and I think it's going to be the best we've seen Chiefs linebackers for a while.
All right, I'm going to put cornerbacks and safeties together because I do think we might see a little bit of both. Brian Cook, for example, might even play a little bit of pseudo linebacker at times, right, just based on his body size. Legarius Sneed all over the place. Trent McDuffie now first healthy full season of the Kansas City Chiefs. Jalen Watts and Joshua Williams now entering their sophomore season. The Chiefs also spent draft capital on Shamari Connor and Nick Jones, Justin Reed, Deion Bush. They brought in Mike Edwards. I mean, this is just a ton of guys. They are the Mariana Trench of deep when it comes to the secondary.
Yeah, another ensemble group here. I give the cornerbacks a 7. I love the cornerback group as well. I think they could challenge the linebackers for that top spot. Sneed's a versatile weapon. He can tackle. He can blitz. Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson played a ton last year. They should take a step forward. Obviously, this group has the potential to be great, especially if Trent McDuffie makes that big leap, and he was very good last year. The safety group, I gave a 5. They're fine. You know, they're generally solid. They're dependable. They're not spectacular. The Chiefs could certainly use an upgrade there, but I don't think they need it. Like, I don't think they need an Eric Berry type to be successful in the Steve Spagnuolo defense, and they don't need the salary that would come along with that either. So I think that's their strategy, is just get a million, like, good DBs, and maybe you have a couple standouts, but it's worked for them so far during this era.
Yeah, I think I'm actually higher on the safeties than you are.
Interesting.
I love the depth they have, and again, it comes down to versatility. That has been the off-season word of the day. If you're Pee Wee Herman right now, and the word's versatility, there is so much of the you know what I'm talking about. That was a horrible Pee Wee Herman impersonation right there, but you get what I'm saying if you've seen that show. There's just so much depth. So much versatility. Mike Edwards, a ball hawk. Justin Reed, thumper, can do a little bit of everything. Brian Cook, again, like I mentioned, a pseudo linebacker to an extent. Deion Bush, special teamer in his own right. Nazee Johnson was a special team ace last year, probably going to take the role of Chris LeMond's this year. Cornerbacks, and we didn't even mention Shamari Connor, the rookie. I mean, again, so much depth and versatility. I can't wait to see what Spags does. And if you've noticed the grades I've given on this defensive side of the ball, I'm so bullish. And the reason is, I think this is the best defense we will have seen in the Patrick Mahomes era. I firmly believe that they have been building and building and building. And it almost feels like it's going to culminate in this outstanding cornucopia, if you will, of talent, of versatility. I know I keep using that word, but it's true. Look at it. It's almost like the Golden State Warriors. Everyone can do a little bit of everything. Spags is like a mad scientist. I can't wait to see who he sends on blitzes. Legarius Sneed, one of the best tackling corners in the NFL. I mean, my goodness, can this season get here already?
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I am ready for the season. Like, I've had my vacation. And I'm sitting here this week, I'm watching the Chiefs at the White House, and I'm just like, let's go. I'm ready. Bring on training camp. I do not want to go through 6 weeks of nothing. I'm ready for the season to begin. This is a really exciting team, and as you point out, this defense could be something special.
Yeah, Patrick Allen joining us right here at Sports Radio 810 WHB. Before we get to special teams, kicker, punter, returners, I do want to touch about the White House very quickly. Well, do you look into that Frank Clark stuff at all? I know a lot of other players went, like Juju Smith-Schuster. Sir Binky also went in his own right. But do you take anything of Frank Clark posting, keep saying us, we, hanging out with all these guys? Or is this just a situation where it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? Of course you're going to go. You don't care if it's not going to be your team this upcoming season if you're a free agent now. Just live in the moment.
Yeah, no, I don't take anything from it. Of course he was going to go and be with his team. That's the kind of guy that Frank Clark is. And he's just in a waiting pattern, like a holding pattern right now. I think he would probably like to come back to Kansas City, but he's in a position where he doesn't have to rush. He's going to be on a team when the season starts, and it's going to be, you know, he might not get signed until training camp, where some team gets in there and they get a look at their pass rushers and they're like, we really need some help. And somebody's willing to open up the wallet more. There's an injury or the Chiefs bring him back. He's fine. So I wouldn't read anything into it. I think he loves Kansas City. He loves the Chiefs, but he's just that, as veteran pass rushers often do, they sit and wait all summer and somebody comes calling.
Yeah. Before I let you go, special teams, scale of 1 to 10, where's your confidence level with special teams heading into 2023?
I'm going to give them an 8. I know Harrison Butker gets the yips every once in a while, but he's one of the most clutch kickers in the NFL. He's been there for the Chiefs when they've needed him the most. And Tommy Townsend was absolutely terrific last year. This is a really good group on special teams. They had some issues. You know, if we're talking about everybody, they had some issues last year in the return game. That pulls them down a little bit. But at the end, when it mattered, they helped them win the Super Bowl and get to the Super Bowl. So they seem to have come around. I'm feeling pretty good about special teams.
Yeah, Tommy Townsend might be the best punter in the NFL. It's going to be intriguing to see if the Chiefs are able to retain him, because he might want to be the highest paid punter in the NFL when his contract is up. And quite frankly, he would deserve that right. When it comes to Harrison Butker, I'm with you. He was once the second most accurate kicker in NFL history. He's still a damn good kicker. He was injured last year. I do find it funny. You mentioned the yips, and no one can deny at times he goes to the yips, but it never seems to happen on clutch kicks. It's right. The opposite of what you would expect.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine with me. Like, if he's going to miss some random extra points and stuff in the regular season and drive us all crazy, that's fine with me, as long as we get to the AFC Championship game and we need to beat the Bengals and he, you know, knocks it through. That's all that matters in the end of the day for this team.
It's like 33-yarder first quarter, shank.
All right,
game on the line, need a 55-yarder, Harrison, nails. It's incredible. It's like a golfer that gets the hosels, but then all of a sudden you need him to make a clutch putt in your Ryder Cup singles match. All of a sudden he drains a 45-footer to win it. It's a walk-off. Like, Harrison Butker, I don't care. He's the kicker for this Chiefs team. You want a clutch kicker, he is a clutch kicker.
Yep, he's the guy. You got to keep him on board.
Patrick, this was a lot of fun. Make sure you check out Patrick Allen and follow him on Twitter. Is it RP Allen now?
No, it's R. Patrick Allen. Same as it's always.
You switched it on me. Don't give this to me, Patrick. Down. Okay, because it's tough because Patrick's not your first name. Okay?
That's right.
When Mahomes came to town, you thought, all right, I'm a Patrick now.
You know, I once said that if Patrick Mahomes ever broke the single-game touchdown passing record, that I would legally change my last name to Mahomes for a year. So I get nervous a couple times a year.
All right. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, and make sure you check out the Arrowhead Addict podcast as well as arrowheadaddict.com. You'll be talking to a lot of fun people as the offseason progresses. Today on the Arrowhead Addict podcast, I talked to Matt Derrick. Tomorrow, I'll be talking with Adam Best. On Thursday, Patrick hosts the Arrowhead Addict podcast, so a lot of fun. Patrick, always a pleasure.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Take a quick break. Come back. Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back into the home stretch, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you again to Patrick Allen from Arrowhead Addict joining us. We'll be joined by Todd Lebo at the top of the hour for the next hour. We'll talk a lot of, well, frankly, everything. We're going to talk PGA Tour, LIV Tour, World Tour, unifying. I'm very befuddled by this move. It came out of nowhere. A lot of players didn't know this. It seemingly just broke out of nowhere this morning. So we'll talk to Lebo about that, what it means, ramifications, where does golf, frankly, go from here. Before we bring Lebo on, though, I do want to talk at least a little NBA with Dylan right here. Didn't get a chance to talk much yesterday or today about it, and I know Game 3 is tomorrow. But this is what I was telling people. Every time you count the Heat out, what do? They prove you wrong. When Jordan Foote was on here, and he's a Heat fan, he Game 7 against Boston, right? He's like, man, no, it's over. I'm not trying to say this to say Foote was wrong, but you said the same thing, too. Everyone I talked to said
we were almost right. Everything was lining up for, and you should know, and I should have realized when everyone's saying one thing.
Yes, when everyone is saying one thing, the Heat have continuously proved other teams wrong. And I'm not just sitting here saying, "Well, the Heat are going to win this with a better team." I think the Denver Nuggets win the series. But what I am saying is, all those people that said this is going to be a sweep. Then after Denver won game one, and they thought, oh, it's a sweep. It's over in five at best. I'm sitting here saying, calm down. This Heat team has been here before. And if you watched game one, I do think there was something to what Michael Malone was saying, how the Denver Nuggets didn't really play great. They just hit more shots. Which, again, that's a big part of sports. You got to hit your shots. But if you watch that game, the game one, Miami Heat moved the ball and got open looks at will. They didn't fall. What happened game two? Same offensive game plan, but Max Struss didn't go 0-for-9 from three. Sometimes it's as easy as saying, watch the game and try and find the law of averages. Now, people are going to say, the Heat went 17 of 35, nearly 50% from three that game. Is that going to continue? Probably not 50%, but they've shot, what, 46% the majority of this playoffs? Not only that, have you seen their roster? What is Duncan Robinson on the team to do? What is Max Struss on the team to do? What is Gabe Vincent on this team to do? They're on the team to shoot threes. So of course, they're probably going to shoot a higher percentage than other teams. Now again, I'm not saying the Heat are the better team, but all I'm saying is that this is not quite as lopsided as folks are trying to make it out to be. Michael Porter Jr. for the Nuggets is the X factor right now, in my opinion. Game one, he was energized. While the shots didn't fall, he was 2-11 from three. He was outstanding defensively. He was a black hole game two. Couldn't shoot, couldn't defend, and it pains me, but Christian Braun, the KU player, outplayed the Mizzou guy in Michael Porter Jr. All right? Look for Michael Porter Jr. to bounce back in Game 3. Take a quick break. Come back. Be joined by Todd Lebo. Homestretch, Sports Radio 810 WHB. Lebo, bringing the energy.
Dude, I'm so tired.
Why are you tired?
I did the freaking Border Patrol this morning at 6 a.m.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Do you want a cookie?
No.
It's not like you have something big planned. Not like you're going somewhere. Yeah, you're going to go relax.
I'm always here for you.
You're about to Aaron Rodgers, R-E-L-A-X.
Going to the sleep depravity. No, what do they call it? It was in a
sleep deprivation
it
system.
Wasn't sleep,
or
it was a light deprivation, right?
It was what your senses?
Yeah, sensory deprivation. That's
sensory deprivation. We got there.
We did.
We got there, baby.
Nailed it.
Where are you going?
Going fishing in Canada, somewhere up in the Great White North. Take off, eh?
Sorry, closer. I meant where are we going?
Well, you're not going.
Why not?
You weren't invited.
Ouch, Dylan. That was.
I was invited. I didn't organize this.
That
trip,
was.
So.
Painful.
You got a big golf trip coming up.
I do. 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Are you in about shape? You ready? You hit balls today?
I hit golf balls today. 100 push-ups a day. 100 sit-ups a day. 100 crunches a day. I'll tell you what.
I thought you were doing squats. Crunches and sit-ups?
Sorry. Yes, squats.
How many have you done today? What's 20? Your deal? You getting up doing 20 and then lunch,
yeah.
20?
Yeah, well, I did. It was great when I did the midday show.
You could like, just
when
I was do doing it during breaks.
I was doing it for Briscoe. Yeah. And it was great because I was doing it in between breaks because it's during the day. I'm not dressed up.
I know what you're doing during break now.
Yeah. Getting after it.
You also beat Dylan at golf on Sunday?
Kicked his ass, man. I felt bad. Frankly, he got
That's
there.
That's not much of an accomplishment.
He started on hole 4. And by
he told me he shot 99, but he only played
14 holes. I threw up a salty little 87. Could have been better. The issue with Winterstone is it gets a little backed up, mm-hmm. So then your back starts locking up.
Yeah, you need to stay loose.
You got to stay loose. Next thing you know, you're trying to bomb a drive.
You need to play on the better courses where guys play better.
Winterstone's a good course.
It's
a great
course.
I love
Winterstone. What you're telling me is the people out there aren't shooting 75, so it takes longer. Yeah, looking for balls.
Yeah.
Arguing over penalty shots.
It was just backed up, backed up, backed up.
Dylan, how many balls did you lose?
I think 6 or 7, yeah. You know, and that's a lie. So
more?
Way more.
How many did you lose?
I don't really know. I didn't.
I think I lost one.
Yeah.
I lost track after.
I think I lost one. It was actually before you showed up. I lost on hole 3. Pushed it. You know, it's a double cross.
Yeah.
You're trying to hit a nice little pull draw.
Mm-hmm.
Push fade. I mean, a pull fade.
You're pretty close to being ready for the LIV/PGA Tour.
Hey, you know what? If they're going to offer me that much money, I'm still saying no. I'm kidding. I'm not going to get all.
That was out of nowhere this morning. They're like, the PGA Tour and LIV are going to merge. It's
not a fan.
It's just a wild thing.
Not a fan. And it's.
Well, it's probably better. Eventually, it'll be better for all the golfers because the money's going to get better for all of them. The LIV guys enjoy making the money they're making, but they don't enjoy playing in front of 1,000 people on the CW.
No one cares.
There's
it
no glory
nothing.
To it.
It means nothing.
They like the money.
Why didn't they come back for majors?
Liz,
it means something.
Absolutely. For like Taylor Gooch, who I believe has made more money in the last year than he's made on his entire I think he has 6 starts on the LIV Tour this year, and that's as much money as he made in like 140 starts in the PGA Tour.
Sure.
So he'd take that money. Okay, there's no question about that. But for most of the guys, they want to play in the majors. They want to be a part of the thing that people are fired up and excited about. I thought this would eventually happen. I didn't think there were going to be 2 separate golf tours with the best players. I mean, there's already like a European tour and all that stuff, but I didn't think that was going to be kind of a pre-existing thing.
Well,
a lot of events in America.
They agreed too.
I did not think it was going to happen this fast.
They agreed too. It was the PGA DP World Tour, which to my understanding is the European tour.
Right.
And then also the LIV.
They're all coming
LIV
together.
Tour.
And it's, you know, there's some sort of, you know, the PGA Tour is like a tax-exempt corporation, and it's going to stay tax-exempt. There's a lot of details to be worked out. a lot of details, and they will not have those answers today, tonight, tomorrow, because they got to figure out, you know, the rules on how you get on the PGA Tour. You finish in the top 125.
Sure.
That's all going to change. The guys with exemptions, the people who didn't pledge loyalty, how will they work with them? A lot of details to get worked
out. How's the money? I mean, seriously, all those dudes that signed all this money up front, like, let's say, Phil, how is that going to end up playing out now that they're under one roof? This is going to be fascinating to watch unfold because a lot of the players did not know, both the LIV players and both PGA Tour. One PGA Tour player reached by ESPN today said, no bleeping way. Like, this was
no clue.
This came out of at least the general public, and again, a lot of the players out of nowhere.
All of the players that came out of nowhere. In a world where everything is leaked, this was amazing that this wasn't leaked. They made this announcement live on CNBC this morning. That the tour commissioner and the guys from PIF, they're on there just making this announcement this morning at 8:30 in the morning, like our time. It was crazy, and none of the players knew. But this isn't something that two guys went into a room and said, "Oh, we're going to do this." There had to have been dozens of people involved in the decision, but nobody knew about it. It was pretty amazing in today's world, where lots of things get leaked or sent out, that nothing got leaked or sent out. There'll be a lot more information coming over the next couple of days, but it's a watershed moment that they're going to – you kind of saw the writing on the wall, I guess, when, you know, the Open Championship said, yeah, these guys can play. And then Augusta said, sure, they can play in our event, you know, because those aren't PGA Tour events. And then the PGA Championship said, okay,
well,
sure, you can play.
They said okay to – Brooks Koepka.
And then Brooks came in and won.
But the point is, what they were saying was, okay, the best guys can come in.
Or the guys who are exempt because
they've won before. Yeah. One of the PGA Tour players who didn't want to be named by ESPN said...
Most of them don't want to be named.
Said, it's insanity. The LIV Tour was dead in the water. It wasn't working. Now you're throwing them a life jacket.
Well,
is the moral of the story, just always take the money? And I guess what it comes down to, a lot of the players who were stuck on PGA saying, hey, we don't want to take the money from
Saudi Arabia.
Right? That was the whole point. They didn't go. They could have gotten all this money. They said, no, we're not taking money from Saudi Arabia. We like what we're building here. We have the history here. I will say, I kind of agree. The LIV was dead in the water. They were going to keep paying those players, but no one cared.
Yeah, well, so here's the question.
No one cared.
What is dead in the water? If you have the money, and that's what we talked about this before, what was going to happen was, I don't believe the people who were the money behind the LIV Tour really cared whether or not they made money. They're doing this thing, the Saudi, if you call it a government, the Saudi royal family, whatever you want to call this thing, one of their objectives is to get sports involved.
Make themselves look good.
It's called sports washing. Is what it's called. You have these events where, you know, they've gotten involved in golf,
soccer,
tennis, soccer. I mean, we've seen Ronaldo, Messi, Benzema now all going over there and playing in this league for these numbers that are insane. They're giving, you know, like Messi's going to make a couple $100 million a year. Okay, nobody's going to see it. That's not going to make money because they don't care if it makes money over there. Here in America, if you have a sports team, you need to try to make money. You need to do these things. Over there, they're like, well, no, it doesn't matter if we're making money. We're trying to get attention. They're trying to shine a more positive light on their country that has an atrocious track record of human rights problems. Now,
yeah.
I'll say this right now. Tell me the country that doesn't have an atrocious track record of human rights issues. We
sure.
have people protesting in the streets every day in America over something.
Yeah,
that's perceived,
I think it's it's a little different here than it is. Come on,
I agree with you.
A little different.
I agree with you. I agree with you. But there are still people here in America who say police are killing people in the streets. You know, these type of things, right? That stuff gets said out there. I think we have the greatest place in the world to live. I don't want to go anywhere else. I'm beautiful. I love it here. But nothing's perfect in America. Nothing's perfect in England. Nothing's perfect in these panaceas like, you know, Sweden or something where everything's. It's not perfect there either. There's trouble all over the world. But we have already a robust sports leagues,
sure,
golf tours, tennis tours, all this stuff. We don't have to have people, you know, make us feel better by watching sports. There was a very interesting thing like 2 months ago on 60 Minutes. We talked about this before, where this is their goal. This is what they want to do. They want people to think of Saudi Arabia in a different light because of sports. So that's what LIV Golf was all about. But I do agree that they weren't going to pay money forever for something that no one watched.
Sure.
But
no one was watching, man. Just straight up.
Also, the catch 22 is you're trying to distract us from something, but that's the main talking point
when you're talking.
Right.
Yeah. The other side of it is you can look at this either way. The PGA Tour says LIV was struggling. They threw them a lifeline. Or you could look at it as the PGA Tour got out over their skis and because they had to up the purses and come up with these things that they couldn't afford. The Saudi royal family and the oil money could afford to lose whatever.
I will say this. I think in the long run, this is still going to be good for golf. It's good for golf having everyone back in one spot.
Hopefully, that's
the goal is everyone gets back under one spot. We'll see.
But they don't have to hopefully
there's still some talk about how the payments are going to work.
Oh, it'll be very complicated. They'll get it figured out.
But bringing everyone back under one umbrella, hopefully, it just raises the level of competition. That's what we want to see. That's what everyone wants to see. You want to see Brooks Koepka, and you want to see the best of the
you
best.
You want to see all the best players.
Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas. You want to see everyone under one roof.
Listen, so you guys aren't old enough to remember this. I remember this. I do not remember the AFL-NFL merger. But yesterday on the Border Patrol, we had Bobby Bell on. Bobby Bell's a Pro Football Hall of Famer. He was drafted by the Vikings and the Chiefs, okay? So all these guys got drafted by both teams back then, or both leagues back then, and then one league would pay more than the other. In my youth, when I was like 12 and 13 years old, the USFL came around, right? So like Reggie White was one of the greatest NFL players of all time. He played in the USFL because he got more money to play in the USFL early. And Steve Young played in the USFL. Herschel Walker played in the USFL. These guys all went over there, but this was America. These people didn't have trillions of dollars. So many of these players who got these big contracts like didn't get all their money because the owners of these things didn't have
liquid.
They didn't have that cash to it. And then the amount of money they were getting from the TV deals was not enough to cover it. Ticket sales weren't enough to cover it. If LIV was running as a business and they said our purses are $20 million a tournament or whatever it is, and our TV revenue is this and the ticket sales are this, it would have been out of business in 1 week.
Yeah,
but they were many businesses have it in their business plan to lose money for a while. I saw this story about FedEx the other day. FedEx lost the first like six or seven years of its existence, lost like $29 million or something. They lost money. Well, but it finally caught on. LIV, honestly, put the pen to paper on how much money they could have lost every year. They could have done this for longer than any of us are alive if they wanted to.
Sure,
because having a $20 million purse on 12 tournaments or whatever they have a year, that's nothing. It's drops in the bucket. It takes a thousand millions to be a billion, and a thousand billions to be a trillion. These dudes have so freaking much money, they could have done it forever. But the golfers didn't want to do it. The golfers didn't want to go. I mean, it's fun. You only play 3 days. You don't get cut. You make money. But they wanted to go play. They want to play. And I'm not just talking about the PGA Championship or Augusta or all that stuff. They want to go to Harbortown. And they want to go to La Jolla. And they want to go to the Colonial. And they want to go to these tournaments that people.
And the Waste Management Tour. They want to play the players.
All those
they want to play TPC Sawgrass.
They want to play
TPC
all those things. Rather,
Scottsdale.
Rather than playing.
Torrey Pines.
Flying all over the world to play three rounds in front of nobody.
And that's what I'm wanting to see now is I hope the PGA doesn't fall into, and I don't think they will, but I don't think they'll go to 54 holes. I don't think they'll take the cut out.
Yeah, they'll have. They've already got in plan to have a few non-cut events, which is probably fine. They've already got a program now. I was talking to Dylan Wu, who was at the Blue Hills. He's on the tour now, and he was telling me about this program they have. If you're, whatever age, you're a rookie on the tour, they have a guaranteed income of like $500,000, okay? And if you're any good at all, you should make that much money. But that way you don't go on tour and lose money.
Sure.
Because you get out there, you get your card, and then all of a sudden you get hurt, and you can't play for a month and a half, and then you miss some cuts. Next thing you know, you've cost yourself money by trying to play golf, because you can do that. So they're trying to get some cost certainties in there with a lot of these different guys. It's going to be complicated, and it's going to be – the commissioner, he looks awful today because yeah. it was like 1 year ago this week that all this trouble was with the, you know, the 9/11 families, because they were playing a tour event outside New Jersey, and these they had written a letter to these golfers saying all this stuff. And there's a quote that she's seen going around today where the commissioner is talking about, when have you ever been ashamed to be a PGA player? And, you know, there's some live golfers would be ashamed because they were taking this Saudi money, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And now he's sitting right next to these people,
yeah,
you know, doing the dance. It doesn't look great for him, but it doesn't look great, but I think it's going to be great because now they'll all make more money and it'll be together.
Yeah. One thing I want to bring up, I just saw this, not golf-related, it's baseball-related. Alex Manoah, who won the Cy Young last year, just got optioned to Toronto's rookie minor league system. Think of that. You win the Cy Young last year, and now you get optioned not just to the minors.
That's a drop.
But rookie league. He's 1-7, 6.36 ERA. I mean, he's pitching like Jordan Lyles right now. Think about, is that the biggest drop you've ever seen from...
In 3 months?
I mean, seriously, you won the Cy Young Award.
And then you've pitched basically 2.5 months? It's pretty bad.
I've never... I mean, Brady Singer was great last year.
Well, he's not...
He didn't win the Cy Young.
He's great, and he didn't get optioned.
He has very similar numbers, Alex Manoah, to Brady Singer, which is not not great.
But Brady's going the right way now.
Brady's going the right way now.
He's nearly 9 ERA.
ERA under 7,
four
baby.
4 starts ago, and now he's under.
But I have never seen, at least that I can think of, a guy go from Cy Young. And what's funny is the other guy I can think of is another Toronto Blue Jays pitcher, Hyun-Jun Ryu.
Mm.
Do you remember him? He won, I think, the Cy Young. Let me look it up. I think Hyun-Jun Ryu won the Cy Young at one point. And then put up a ridiculously, he got third. Third in the Cy Young, and the next year he put up a 4.37 ERA.
That sounds like pretty good stuff. It's better than this.
What's going on with the Toronto Blue Jays? You get one great year, then all of a sudden they're bums.
It happens. It happens. It's still, I think, now, and he didn't get some big deal either, though. He was a younger pitcher.
He's 25.
Yeah, so I guess you'd rather do what's Steven Strasburg and roll up, what'd he get, $35 million a year for whatever, and he's pitched like
He's pitched like 47 innings since he signed. He's going to get 250-some million, like 285.
Yeah, he's thrown in 8 games and may never pitch again.
Yeah, they talked about how he has nerve.
Yeah.
I mean, you feel for the guy. But also, a little bit. I mean, I'm sure he wants to be out there.
Sure.
If you're an athlete, you always want to be out there. It sucks. But it doesn't suck still getting paid $35 million. Baseball has the best
or
Players
worst.
Association.
Oh, yeah. Best Players Association, dumbest owners. Great combination. How would you – Steven Strasburg has had arms trouble since every year of his
rookie
contract.
Year, I think.
Even. Every year.
And they still were like, hey, you know what? We're going to sign you to an 8-year, $285 million deal.
What 30-year-old would you sign to an 8-year deal? And Major League Baseball owners continually sign pitchers.
Albert Pujols, Miguel Cabrera, Alex Rodriguez, Jacoby Ellsbury. The Yankees can just probably go on and on. Like Mark Teixeira, I'm sure, got some massive one.
Chris Davis.
Chris Davis. He wasn't even 30, but I'm thinking like older guys. Who was a third baseman, not Mark Teixeira, who was on the Rangers, I think also went to the Yankees at one point. Not Michael Young. He was a shortstop.
Not Teixeira?
Not Teixeira. He was at first base.
Michael Young, he didn't.
He was a shortstop.
He Alex moved Rodriguez?
No, it was another guy, yeah.
But plenty of these guys. But, I mean, I would never sign a 30-year-old pitcher to anything over, like, 3 years.
But they continuously do it.
Boris tricks them.
Seriously, like, if you don't sign him, some other team is. Who else is doing this?
This is a worse deal than Albert Pujols or Miguel Cabrera.
Oh, yeah.
They at least went out there and played.
Yeah, they were bad. But like, yeah, you're right. They at least played. Hank Blaylock was who I was
Hank
thinking
Blaylock.
Didn't he get a big deal at some point? Maybe not.
Probably.
Alfonso Soriano.
How many games, how many times, what's a good number of starts for a Major League Baseball pitcher?
33, I think, is about the, about 30 to 33 is, I think, if you only miss one or two starts.
Okay, so twice Steven Strasburg had 33 starts. Three times he had 30 starts. He has played in every year of baseball, 13 years, so he did it three times. I don't know why you would give someone anything over
30. Go over 30 because I just did it. 162 divided by 5 is 32.4.
So three.
So if you're an ace, you don't miss a game.
He did that three times in 10 years, and they gave him an 8-year contract. And now since then, he has pitched a total of 8 games and a total of 32 innings.
I said 48. I was generous.
21. Plus 9 2/3, 22. So it's like 32 innings, 33 innings in three years. It's like $200,000 a pitch, and that's only going to get worse or better depending on your deal, because he's not pitching in the next 5 days, and he's not going to pitch in the next 5 days after that, and he's not going to pitch in the next 5 days after that.
Well, he's done for the year.
Yeah. Well, he's going to get all that money.
He's done,
and he doesn't pitch
for
next
his career.
Year, it's going to that number is just going to go up per pitch. It's incredible.
It's absurd. Will the NFL ever
for all players? No, they've done a few guaranteed deals.
Deshaun Watson is the one that always.
Kirk Cousins has done
out.
Some shorter guaranteed,
but those are
deals.
Short ones.
But still, it's guaranteed.
Yeah, Mahomes is a lot guaranteed for a 10-year.
But not
for
near
a 10-year.
As much as that.
No,
Russell Wilson a lot guaranteed.
A lot guaranteed.
Yeah, they're not going to do it. They shouldn't do it.
NBA is.
Not until the Live Football League.
The Live Football League. Well, that's what I saw someone talking on Golf Channel about today. I mean, the difference is this. In if you want to be someone who owns an NFL team, you have to be vetted and they have to vote on you. But will some Saudi billionaire want to come in and buy a team someday and they just like, well, we're not going to turn down this money? I don't know.
The NFL seems like they wouldn't.
Seems
but,
like it. English Premier League.
They also are a team that's taken so much money that they're going to have a playoff game streamed only on a streaming service, so maybe they would.
The English Premier League had a bunch of – they were kind of community-owned teams, a little bit like the Packers. They had some people with some money that bought some teams. But then they started taking American money, like Stan Kroenke owns a Premier League team, and the Glazier family, who owns the Tampa Bay Bucks, they own a Premier League team. And some different people like that have come in there and bought it. And then, oh, well, this is great. These guys have this money, blah, 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 that they're on in America, and it's more money for them and all this stuff. And then they start taking money from Russian oligarchs, right? And then these guys come in, these Abramovich's and all these guys own teams. And then it can happen. It could happen. I don't think so. But what if the Saudis wanted to start playing American football? And they said to, I don't know.
Isaiah Rodgers.
A middle of the road guy, not Patrick Mahomes or someone like that.
Kirk Cousins. Ryan Tannehill.
A younger player. Let's say
Kenny Pickett.
Kenny Pickett. And they say, here's $40 million a year to come play in Saudi Arabia. Would Kenny Pickett go, that's stupid and crazy? Or would Kenny Pickett go, well, I don't know, man. It's like 4 years of my life. It's $160 million. I'm not going to get this here. I don't know.
You better hope you don't get injured over there.
Well, maybe it's guaranteed. I don't know. But the possibilities are out there. We don't know, for the most part, the guys in American football, in the NFL, there's only one foreign-born owner, and that's Shad Khan.
Yeah.
But he has lived in America and went to college here and all that stuff. But I don't know. Maybe they would. Maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. Because I know this about business people. They take money.
Yep.
They take money. And if they want to buy a team or whatever, and they're talking about expanding and maybe having a division in Europe, whatever, I don't think they would. But I didn't think, never in my wildest dreams, that I think Saudi Arabians were going to start a golf league.
I would say it's easier to start a golf league than a football.
Certainly, because you just got to buy a few players to come over.
Yeah, you're not buying 53-man rosters
But could you buy yourself into the league if someone puts a team up for sale? I mean, it's your team to sell. You have to you agree with the covenants that the league has to approve
your sale. And they have to get, 24 to 32 teams to agree upon it?
Right, or who the person is. And I'm sure that wouldn't happen. But let's say there's some family-owned team like, you know, the Bengals. That's the Brown family owns them, and they're not well-run. What if someone came in and said, we'll give you $6 billion to the team? And what did the Browns, what are they into that thing for? I mean, it's not much because they've had the thing since 1960, whatever, you know.
Like $37. They were
seriously. I mean, it's not a lot of money, and you say, I don't know.
It's a pretty good ROI.
Yeah,
not a bad ROI.
Not bad at all. Or if they decide they like baseball, and you know, I mean, David Glass bought the team for $96 million or whatever it was, and sold it for $1 billion.
Or maybe Al Davis gets a little, you know, or my bad, Al Davis, Mark Davis, with the issues they're having with tag, all that stuff. He just doesn't want to deal with it, and they put a check in front of him that makes all of it go away, and they're a partner.
Yeah, and maybe he can finally get someone to cut his hair.
I don't think.
Oh, I was saying that thing to the.
I don't think that they.
Oh
would,
yeah, yeah. But he did cut his hair.
Oh, Mark Davis's hair is still atrocious. Style his hair; that'd be better.
Yeah.
I don't think. I don't think the NFL owners would do that. But I'm saying it's not. It's not 100% out of the possibility.
You're saying it's not 0%. There's not a 0%, but nothing is a 0% chance. So,
no.
All right, I'm out. Don't want it to happen. Leave it alone. Maybe I'm old. Maybe I'm yelling at you to get off my lawn. But leave things as they are. I enjoy it.
Yeah.
Okay. And also, I don't think the players are going to go for that. They're going to go for the travel.
No, I don't think it's going to happen. But you know, it's just like. Didn't think this other would happen either.
Yeah.
And you can't even imagine how much money. Go get your Forbes list, and you think Jeff Bezos is rich. These guys ain't on the Forbes list because they don't tell you about their money. There's no publicly traded stocks on the Saudi Arabian oil exchange. They just have maybe $1 trillion. I mean, so much money. It's crazy.
And would they even have to have that league be based in Saudi Arabia if they did start it? Would they just leave it here with all the
who knows, yeah,
different cities?
Maybe so. Let's have a rival league. The $7 million the Browns was what it cost to get in 1967. $7 million.
Wow.
There's
one
team
pretty
there.
Good ROI.
There's
right
one.
Now.
It's like the Giants cost like $100 or something.
Yeah.
It was 1920 something.
I think it's the Bears cost like $10,000 or something like that.
No, it's less than that. It's like literally like $100. Like when 1920, when the like Giants and Bears and all, it was like $100 to get in the league.
Why couldn't we have been alive back then?
I don't know.
Lebo, you should've build been. A time machine during the break. Yeah. We're gonna go back. In
I don't
want
to go back to the 20s. I don't want to do that. I would build a time machine to go back in the break, and I would just like. Like in my lifetime, I like where I am right now. I'm 53 years old. I like where I am. If I could go back to like 1983 or 4 or whatever and just take all my food vending money and put it in like Apple stock and then make money with that. And then when Google came around, I would take all my Channel 4 money and put that into Google in whatever year that was.
Mm.
And you wouldn't have ever met me, so...
Wow, Lebo is just saying he'd big time us, Dylan.
I'd have been gone.
He would big time us.
I wouldn't be working, I know that.
We'll take a quick break as Lebo tries to build a time machine. Welcome back in. Lebo and I just playing some great air drums and guitar right now. You normally play air bass. I'm a little surprised. I love that Lebo, when given the opportunity to play an air instrument.
I mostly play guitar.
Chooses
you see me do a little bass as well.
And he plays real high. He gets that thing up there. You get that thing up there. You're really trying to...
Gotta get the high notes. Yeah. Exactly.
It was impressive. I'm impressed with your bass playing. It's tantalizing to watch.
Tantalizing. Titillating?
Some say. What would you call it, Dylan? What would you call his bass playing?
That's immaculate.
Immaculate.
Yes,
ooh.
So good.
Good word. All right. What do you think of Travis Kelce talking about the Chiefs being a dynasty when asked about is the Chiefs, are they getting close to the Warriors dynasty, which is because he was asked that question. It wasn't like he just brought that up out of nowhere. What do you make of that?
I think it's a fairly decent comp. It's interesting. Here's where you start your premise. Is it harder to win the NBA championship or a Super Bowl?
Super Bowl.
I agree.
Because one versus seven.
One game. The best team nearly always wins a series. There are some upsets here and there.
The Miami Heat are the 8 seed.
They are, that's a long season, and they probably were better than 8 seed. Like the Lakers weren't the 7th best team in the West.
Agreed.
And the way the NBA works now, the people load manage themselves to whatever, and it injuries or whatever. But how often do you see a team that's just outstanding? Like the 07 Patriots, if they played the Giants 7 times, how many times would the Patriots have beaten the Giants?
Probably 6.
Okay, so they lost the 1.
Yeah.
And that's why they didn't win that. So the Chiefs have won 2 Super Bowls, gone to 3, 5 straight AFC Championship games, all at home. Now, they weren't the 1 seed in every one of them. They had some fortune happen in the playoffs to get the games there. But it's pretty amazing where they are right now. This is a big year for legacies because the window is not closing on Patrick Mahomes' career, but the window's closing on some of these players' careers. Travis Kelce's not getting younger. I don't think he's dropping off, but there's – windows are different all the time, right? There's always upheaval, whatever happening in sports. What did the Warriors win? 5?
They won four in 8 years.
4 in 8 years.
They went to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And the Chiefs, if you look at it in what they've done so far in 4 years, mm-hmm. they've been to 3 and 1-2. So they're actually right on pace if you're using Golden State. But I don't think they have to win that many to be – I think if they won one more.
What you need to do is you need to stay above 500 in your Super Bowls.
Well, I will also say this.
They're barely above 500 in their championship games at home. They have hosted 5 of these, but they've lost. That also means they've lost 2 AFC championship games at home. Now, they're both in overtime, right? They've had some wild games. There's been some nutty stuff happen. But the Warriors.
They also blew a 3-1 lead.
They did, and you're also playing good teams and whatever. But I think it's kind of apples and oranges when you're talking about them.
Sure.
Because I do think it's harder to win a one game and done thing than long ass series.
100%.
And it's even harder now because it used to be, or it's easier now to exert your force. It used to be the first series was 5 games. I mean, you could kind of get caught up in 5 games and get beat.
Mm-hmm.
Like same way in baseball when the ALCSs used to be 3 games.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's a lot harder to lose than 5 games. And, you know, they have all these different playoff things that have gone through, and they want more playoffs and more money to be had in these. But I think that, I don't know what a dynasty is, but I think going to 3 out of 4 Super Bowls and winning over half of them at this point, this would be a huge year for them. I think if you win 3 Super Bowls in 5 years, that's dynastic for sure.
I think once you're that third, I think that's when you really become in the pantheon of dynasties. Right now, I would call it domination. You're dominating the AFC. But when you look back in 20, 30 years, would you say, was that a dynasty or was that just a very, very good stretch? I think that third Super Bowl, it takes all of the questions and answers them.
And it's interesting, too, because, I mean, do you care how you won the Super Bowl?
And not even this year. I think if you win 3, if you have, I think, about a 10-year window, in my opinion, because 30% in 10 years is absurd when you think about it.
Just think about this. They didn't go to the Super Bowl for 50 years.
Yeah.
Okay? And now they've gone 3 times. But do you care? Like, the Patriots were obviously a dynasty, right? But it was kind of we kind of joke about Tom Brady's had 3 Hall of Fame careers.
Yeah.
They won 3 early on. Didn't win another one for 10 years.
Yeah.
And then won 3 more.
It elongated it, really. It was different.
But
it's
the first
2
3
separate dynasties.
Yeah, correct.
Tell me the Patriots' dominant Super Bowl victory. And the Chiefs don't have one either, by the way. But like when I think about, like you'd watch the 49ers play in these Super Bowls. They had one close game, and they went 55-10. They win the Super Bowl. It was just crushing people. And the Patriots won by a field goal, and they won by a field goal. And they won by a field goal.
And the Rams choking.
And then they won by the Seattle won. They won by 4, I think, because Seattle needed to score a touchdown, right? But that was That was the ball
on the goal
at
line.
The goal line with the last one. They were down 25 points and won in overtime against the Falcons. What was the other one they won?
Rams second time,
13-3. That was their biggest Super Bowl win. They scored 13 points and a big win. So that wasn't it was domination because they won the division all the time. They went to Super Bowl.
The only domination was the Giants. If they would have beaten the Giants, that would have been considered domination. But today's NFL, it's so
they lost to them twice.
It's so equalized, and the Eagles. But it's so equalized right now. The NFL, it just seems like the competition is, for the most part, spread out.
Yeah,
the salary cap and how the way the players are and talking to Tim Grunert about this too a while ago just made me bring it up. There's not as much loyalty anymore as far as players taking a pay cut to stay with the team for legacy reasons. I mean, you saw Tyreek Hill bounce for a couple more million. You see players do this all the time. It's not like, hey, I'm going to stay here, take a pay cut. It's no, who's offering me the most money? Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, you're seeing more spread out talent on each team. You're seeing teams, the level of competition equalize, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's going to be harder to do a lot of these things. I mean, we talked about those dynasties that the Steelers had. The Steelers won 4 in 6, and they were the exact same players almost on all of the Super Bowls. And those in the NBA, the Lakers dynasty in the 80s, which wasn't entirely dominant because the Celtics won 3 times too. But the very first one to the last one, they're like the same players on the team. A couple guys in the middle who weren't in there. There's a whole lot of the same people on all these teams. And I think with the Chiefs, with what they have going right now, they've turned the roster over a lot. But if you got the same coach, quarterback, and Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, there's just some important guys.
We looked it up, and it is very Patriots-esque, although we've probably not thought about it in the moment, that you keep your core and rotate everyone else. Chiefs have kind of done that. We talked about it the other day with Jason Anderson. I forget what number we came up with. It may have been like 6 dudes who were on the first of this current iteration of Super Bowls compared to last year's. It's Mahomes, Chris Jones, Travis Kelce, Nick Allegretti.
Mm-hmm. Who didn't play. The first one, really. I mean, he was around, but
the special teamers, as far as Butker, Winchester.
Not the punter, though.
Not Townsend.
Was there,
That's about it.
Frank Clark.
I mean, he's not on the team right now.
Yeah.
That's true.
He's not on the team right now.
I mean, you look back, and you're like, that's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. And, Andrew Wiley was on the team, but he's not now.
Yeah.
Mecole Hardman was, but he's not.
Yeah, that's what we're going by, is who is currently on this team.
On this roster right now.
That's how we broke it down, not our, if you were
and
on that team.
If you took it back to, the 2018, when they made a title game, it's probably those guys were on there, so it's probably those same guys because Chris Jones was on the team. Patrick and Travis were on the team.
Yeah.
But the turnover was pretty incredible. But you did the same thing with Tom Brady. I mean, you will look at see who he was throwing passes to in their first Super Bowl and who he was throwing passes to in their last one. Those dudes, some of them were in like middle school.
Troy Brown
or maybe elementary
David
school.
Patton and then Julian Edelman.
And then Randy Moss in the middle. Then you had
Randy
Julian
Moss,
Edelman.
Yeah,
Wes Welker.
All kinds of different guys around there. And, you remember Gronk. Well, Gronk wasn't on those teams at the beginning.
No.
Gronk was in freaking high school when they were out there winning Super Bowls.
I think also what makes Mahomes already so impressive is he's already now going to these different iterations. Yes, Travis Kelce is still there, right? That's a big one. But they did it without Tyreek Hill.
Right.
There's been that turnover now.
Put all this money on Sammy Watkins, and he's gone.
But it shows that Mahomes can do it without having – it's not just the team around him. It shows that he can elevate everyone else. Now, when Travis Kelce goes, then that ushers in my opinion, the next generation of, or the next iteration of what Patrick Mahomes can become, because Tom Brady had to do the same thing,
sure,
right?
He did.
But, and I said the same thing. You know how the Patriots had a down few years in between? I'm not saying they were horrible, right?
Yeah, they just weren't in the Super Bowl. They were never going 5-11.
And I said realistically, if you want to break it down this way, if Mahomes is here for another 15, 12, whatever you want to call it, 12, 15 years, 10, 15 years. The Chiefs are probably going to go through. There's probably going to be a 4-year stretch at some point where, they're making the playoffs.
Knocked out in the first round. Something didn't go their way.
But then, as long as you have him, and then eventually you'll build around.
Find those next ones.
What we never bring up with the Warriors, and kind of going back, is this. They were able to draft second overall in a draft. The Chiefs did not have that in their current dynasty. Their current, if you want to say, dynasty, right? Now, the difference was Golden State blew that pick. James Wiseman was not great. They traded him for a couple of second rounders and Gary Payton the second. But they drafted second overall. People don't bring that up when they talk about the Golden State dynasty. They say, okay, well, the next year that they won.
Well, they also probably, I don't think they were going to win if Kevin Durant didn't go there. You know, he helped them be part of those. Now, listen, they've won since then. But
sure.
You can't take away the part that when he was there.
They were, they're 2-2 without Durant, and they're 2-0 with him there. At least when he was there and
playing,
healthy,
yeah.
Playing. Who is the Kevin Durant for the Chiefs? Was it Tyreek Hill?
No.
Because he wasn't brought in.
Yeah.
But you're saying
you know, I'm going to tell you that
they won
Kevin
without.
Durant is? Well, I think Kevin Durant is, because if this guy's gone, I think it'll be a lot harder. And that's Chris Jones. I think Chris Jones, if he's not on this team, I don't think the Chiefs won the Super Bowl last year without Chris Jones. Okay? And I don't think he's going to get some sort of deal worked out, and he's going to be at a high level for a few more years. They'll have to find the next,
sure,
whatever that is.
Is it Jordan Poole? But if you're if you're going back to
it
Golden
State,
it could
be some guy you've never heard of.
I think the only
who
way
right now is a sophomore at fill in the blank school. That's
Blue
my
Valley
point.
North, baby.
Well, probably not at Blue Valley North. They hope he's
a
sophomore.
You?
He's probably
Blue
a sophomore
North.
In college now because he'll be in the league in like 3 years.
So Mizzou. So Luther Burden. You give me a sophomore this year.
Something like that. I said this when Patrick Mahomes first jumped on the scene in like 18 or it could have been in 19, that like there right now is a kindergartner who's going to catch a playoff pass from Patrick Mahomes. And there's probably not a kindergartner right now who's going to catch a pass from Patrick Mahomes because that would mean that's like 12 years of high school and like 2 years of college at least. But there's probably a kid who's in like a sixth grader who you've never heard of in your life. And he's going on family vacation to Six Flags this week.
Surprise,
and then
he's going to be
in middle school in the Metroplex, okay, next year. And that kid is going to catch a touchdown pass in the playoffs from Patrick Mahomes. Because that's the way it works. They'll always have some of these old guys around. But think about Tom Brady just played last year, and he won the Super Bowl 2 years ago. Go look up the 21-year-old who played with Tom Brady last year and think about where he was when the 2001 Patriots, where he was a baby. He wasn't even in school yet.
Yeah. That's wild.
I mean, if you can play.
Well, where were you when I wasn't doing radio because I was just a little tyke, and now look at you and me doing radio together.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Boom.
In 1998, I was working – talking on this radio station. Where were you?
I was four.
Four. Calling into your mom's radio show.
I was.
There you go.
Sterling's Moments, baby.
That's it.
Still living. Take a quick break. Come back. Talk about the Chiefs at the White House with Todd Lebo. As Lebo heads to vacation, what better way? A little reggae, huh? A little Bob Marley. Is this how you get the fish to come to you? You tell him, I'm going to love you.
I'm going to love you.
I'm going to love and treat you right.
Yes.
I'm like, all right, maybe I'll bite.
Nibble?
Is that how the walleye comes to you?
Hopefully. We'll see.
All right, so the Chiefs are at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
Travis Kelce tried hopping on the mic. Don't know if you saw the video.
I think it was fake, but
I think so too. It was all a bit, is what it looked like. But it was Mahomes was basically handing Biden a
jersey
because every president gets a jersey or with your name on it. And when they're doing that, Kelce hops up on the mic. I was like, I've always wanted to do this. Mahomes runs over. Sorry, everyone. Not gonna happen.
Not happening.
What do you make of the trip to the White House as far as Frank Clark being there, some of the former players being there? Obviously, Frank Clark's the one that stands out to me, right? Because he's still unsigned.
McCall Hardman was there, and Juju was there. A lot of guys. It was a good thing. The Chiefs generally do things right, okay? These guys were a part of what they did. Eric Bieniemy was there. He's a part of what they did, right? So, hey, we're going to celebrate what they did last year. So they invited all these guys, and I think it was great to see those guys back together. I mean, there's no hard feelings. It's business, man. You know, Mecole Hardman signed somewhere else. He didn't get a deal he wanted from the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Frank Clark isn't signed anywhere yet. Carlos Dunlap's not signed anywhere yet. You know, Chad Henne's retired. They were there hanging out, having fun. It's a great honor to get to do it. And they got gypped out of doing these things last time. They did not get to do it because of the pandemic. And now they got to go do this. So it's all part of the thing. It's interesting. You know, they used to not do this. I was talking to Bobby Bell, Pro Football Hall of Famer, at the Trent Green Golf Classic on Monday. And they didn't – there was no White House trips when they won the Super Bowl back then. It was just like, all right, we did it. That was kind of – it started in the 80s.
Sure.
Really. And they used to get like, they used to call, the president used to call the locker room. That's
sure.
what they do after the game. You'd get them on the phone and they'd, you know, you'd talk to the president because they wanted,
cool.
they think the president Nixon called Lynn Dawson in the locker room on a secured line, right? And I remember pretty sure President Reagan called the Royals clubhouse when it was over and, you know, you're on the phone. Ah, great job, you know, guys. Ella, thank you very much, you know. And now you just take the trip to the White House and do
sure.
it.
Sure.
And I'm just glad it didn't turn into some big political thing. There's been many times over the past 8 years where someone's like, well, I'm not going. I don't like this guy. Or I'm not going on.
I think it's so stupid. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to go to the White House. You've been talking about it since you, or you've seen pictures and all stuff since you were a child.
Just go do it. You're not making a political statement by going or not going. You're going there to celebrate with your team.
Yeah.
And it's an honor to be invited because they don't invite the losers. So.
Yeah. You only go if you win.
Yeah.
Winners are invited. Doesn't matter. It's not like you're planning to win in a certain year. I'm only going to this guy's president. I'm only going to this dude's Who cares? Just go.
It was cool. It was a neat thing to see all those guys there. And it was fun. It was poignant because, you know, Norma Hunt had passed away over the weekend and it was the day after that. So, you know, there was some emotion on that side of it. It's a shame that they couldn't all be there because some of the family didn't go because of that.
But,
yeah. It was a interesting affair for sure.
With Norma Hunt, one quick thing that I find so awesome about her lifetime is she was able to see a lot of her dreams come true, right? She was on the forefront of bringing soccer, right? She was there, and now she got to see Kansas City get to host a World Cup.
Yeah.
Like, not often do you get to see your legacy play out in real time. And so I have to find it so satisfying for her seeing part of her legacy play out in real time.
Yeah, for sure.
What a cool.
And she, you know, you saw the stats. I mean, she's the only female to be at all 57 Super Bowls. That's incredible. Anyone? I mean, it's not a 5-page list of people who have been to all 57 Super Bowls because you have to have been old enough to go.
Yeah,
it takes out people who are 56 and under weren't there and. There weren't a lot of babies at the first one either. So you had to have been of an age and be involved in the National Football League in some way, whether media, ownership, league, whatever, to go do that. And sometimes you just don't go.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, going every year to the Super Bowl when the Chiefs were as bad as they were probably wasn't the greatest thing in the world, you know. But you went because it's like the big celebration of the league.
Sure.
And, you know, Lamar was so integral in making the Super Bowl and the merger of the leagues, you know, doing all those things. So you went. But – so her last Chiefs game she got to see was that. It's pretty amazing.
Before we get out of here, Frank Clark, if you saw what he's been posting, all that stuff, it's a lot of, look what we did, look at all of this. He remains unsigned. You've heard about Chris Jones on Twitter nearly daily talking about bringing the Shark back.
Yeah, they were taking pictures in the White House yesterday.
Yeah, what do you think
These
of this?
These guys are friends. I mean, I you're asking me right now.
I'm asking
do
you.
Do I think Frank
June
Clark
6th.
Is going to be a Chief? Yeah, I think he'll be a Chief. I think it'll be at some nice rate that it's not going to be what he used to make. But he didn't make what he used to make last year. They had to redo his deal in a big way. Most people thought he was going to be a summer cut last year.
Yeah.
And they didn't cut him because he didn't have a lot of leverage because of the things that had happened off the field where he was like, hey, you want to play? All right, here's the deal. You come play with us, you're going to make this much money. I think he likes playing here. I think he likes playing with the players on this team. I think he gets Andy Reid. I think Andy Reid gets him. I mean, I've talked to Frank about that and about how, like, he and Coach Reid get along. They've you know, they're both from Los Angeles, and they got things they can talk about, you know, which blows some people's minds, like Andy Reid and Frank Clark. No, he gets Frank Clark. So I think Andy would like to have him back, but it's the business, and you have to let the offseason go. It has to go through its processes and its steps, but I think – is Frank Clark going to be a Raider next year or a Chief? I think he's going to be a Chief.
Yeah.
Is he going to be a Cowboy or a Chief? I think he's probably going to be a Chief because no one has gone out there and said, here's 3 years, $37 million. He's not getting that
deal. So, he would not be a free agent.
Yeah. He's going to be – he's like becoming like what Carlos Dunlap is becoming, yeah. One-year guy or, you know, what – you know, Melvin Ingram, you know, which is fine. You go do that for a few years and maybe you don't get to play with the Chiefs every year. But maybe in 3 years, you're never going to regret making that $3 million or whatever. So you go take it. But I like Frank Clark. I think he fits in here. And I think they could use another pass-rushing type guy, especially because he mentored Karloftis so well last year. And I think he would do the same thing with Felix.
Yeah, and he's only 29. He's younger than folks
might think. Absolutely younger than people think.
Lebo, I appreciate you. You go up there to Canada. Oh, Canada.
Catch some fish.
Drink some milk from a bag. Some poutine.
Probably find some...
We're out of here.
Molson's.